Hello, listeners. This is Kevin Huffnagel of the bands Gorguts, Dysrhythmia, Sabbath Assembly, and Vora. And this is my chapter in As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Mr. Kevin Huffnagel, how are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name's Trav, and tonight I have Kevin Huffnagel, guitarist of, oh, for crying out loud, I was looking at your Wikipedia page. You're probably pushing 20 at this point, but my induction to you was Dysrhythmia. I was an old school Dysrhythmia fan, and I kind of been tracing what you've been doing here and there, and next thing I know, you landed in Gorguts, and I just went and saw you a couple weeks ago, and I thought it would be awesome to get you on the show and talk to you. So,
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. So, it'll be we can't go through your discography. This will be a 9-part. You know, it'll be too much. But I kind of want to. I never really heard any background stuff on you. You get a lot of guitar credit as far as like, you know, with your solo art being very solo stuff. I mean, being very ambient and kind of out there, and all the way to like really techie metal stuff and everything. But I mean, I kind of want to, let's talk a little bit about how it all got started and, you know, where you're from and all that and everything. Cause that's kind of more of my angle anyway. So, I noticed you called me from a 215 number.
Yeah.
You started in Philly, right?
Dysrhythmia started in Philly. Yeah. I moved to Philly for college in 1994. I went to the University of the Arts, and I ended up staying there until 2005. Summer of 2005 is when I left for New York. Never changed my number either. So,
where were you from that you went to Philly for school?
So I was born in Baltimore, and then I moved around kind of quite a bit during childhood and high school years and things. East Coast, but before Philly, I was in Northern Virginia. Kind of near DC. That's where I lived when I went to high school.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you went to school in 94, so that makes you like 40?
Yeah. Just turned 40 this September.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I graduated in 93. We're right around the same age.
Okay. So.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So you went to Philadelphia in 94, and What led you to that school? Like, why that one?
I only applied to really just a small handful of schools, and it kind of came down to either UArts in Philly or Shenandoah Conservatory out in Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. Two really opposite schools, actually. If I went the Shenandoah path, I would have lived, you know, out in the mountains and nature and studied pretty much just classical guitar as my major.
Okay.
And then, or, you know, Philadelphia, you know, big city, and there I studied jazz. I studied classical privately outside of school, but I went there for jazz. So it was kind of like two different paths I could have taken, and I chose Philly. I'm glad I did. So, yeah. That's why, yeah, it was crazy, though, moving, you know. I had already had some experience with big cities, and I went to D.C. a lot to see shows in high school, and my family's actually from New York City, so I've been to New York City, you know, a bunch of times throughout my childhood and stuff, so.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, it kind of made sense, I guess. I ended up in a major city for college, and then ended up continuing to live in major cities since then.
Got it. What shows were you going to see when you were a kid? I mean, when I hear DC and I hear my age, I just assume Discord, Fugazi, and all that stuff. But
I like that stuff, but yeah. I kind of got into that, honestly, a little bit after its peak, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, like in high school, I was seeing a lot of shows at this place, The Bayou in Georgetown, and the old 930 Club when I was small.
Okay.
And the shows were more like metal shows. Yeah, in high school, especially, I was big metalhead. Yeah, I still am. Always have been, actually. But yeah, just like kind of like more underground stuff, you know, that would play at the smaller clubs that me and all my friends were into. Okay. Voivod, you know, Fate's Warning. What else did I see there? Actually, saw Dream Theater there way back when they were a tiny band.
Brother, I've seen Dream Theater like 6 times. I keep holding hope that they're going to kind of sound like the early stuff again. It just keeps not working out.
Yeah, I'm really not. I really kind of honestly lost interest in that band pretty quickly after Images and Words. But
yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I did see them back in the day. So yeah, more keyboard stuff like that.
Keyboard player makes a band, doesn't it? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Kevin Moore is great. You know, I like his solo stuff better than anything Dream Theater's done.
I love his solo stuff. Yeah, when he left and they got Sheridan, I was kind of like, Sheridan, I guess, can technically keep up with him, but just the vibe's not there anymore. Kind of lost it right around there.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's cool with the tech metal stuff. I talk to a lot of hardcore dudes that are like, not really into that, you know, like they'd be embarrassed to admit that they listen to Fate's Warning. I rocked Parallels. Like I wore that cassette out. I love that album.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're one of my all time favorite bands still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any shame in talking about, you know, music like that, you know, no matter how uncool it might be or whatever. It's, you know,
I mean,
but at the same time I did, you know, when kind of towards the end of high school, actually the original bass player in Dysrhythmia, Clayton Ingerson,
I remember
him. Yeah, he was, you know, all about the DC hardcore stuff, you know, and he showed me, he turned me on to all that Fugazi and Bad Brains and all that stuff, Black Flag and all that, like, towards the end of high school. So I don't know, I already missed out on seeing a lot of that stuff live, I guess. But yeah, I love
Clayton
that stuff
is actually,
too. Yeah.
Clayton is actually what drew me towards Dysrhythmia. Not that I don't like Jeff's drumming, not that I don't like your guitar playing, but you you and Jeff made sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like when I went to see you guys, I was kind of like, okay, that's kind of what I expected Kevin to look like. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what I expected Jeff to look like. Clayton was kind of insane, making faces, jumping on people and everything. Like yeah. he was really like, and you know, we saw you guys in the Pirates Cove.
Oh yeah. The place in Allentown, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I live in Bethlehem, the next town over. And, that was my one and only show in the Pirates Cove. And it was like people, you know, but trying to do backflips off of a washer in a low ceiling and crashing into stuff and everything. But Clayton was like bumping into people and running around and having fun and everything. It really, I was really kind of surprised. I thought you guys would have more of a tech, like we're going to stand still and pay attention to our instruments because what we're doing is insane. And Clayton was like insanely good technical approach and running around and slamming into people and everything. So That was kind of the hook. That was the hook of the mouth for me.
Yeah, I mean that was. I don't know. It was weird when we. It's funny if you know there's footage of our very first show ever on YouTube that I actually uploaded. It's just one song, but it's funny to watch that and see how, yeah, at our very first show, we were very still and timid, you know, and trying not to screw up. Right. And that all kind of went out the window pretty fast, I think, after the first couple shows. We were just like, man, why do we feel so reserved? You know, it's like, let's just rock out, you know, and this is just because that's how we want it. That's what we want to do. We were like holding back at first, but I don't know. It's like kind of, I don't know. It's like once you have these songs kind of under your fingers, you know, it's nice to have that, to feel that freedom of like, oh, I can actually move and play this stuff and I don't have to like think so hard or look at my hands or anything. You know, it's always a nice feeling. It's kind of, it's boring to stare at your hands the whole time. It's boring for me as a player, and I think it's probably boring to watch too. But.
Yeah, I agree. I think stage antics definitely is part of my grade. I don't want to be that asshole that's standing in the back with my 1 foot up on the wall with my arms crossed, like, impress me, dude. You know what I mean? But I feel like if you're super technical and perfect, but you pretty much riveted your feet to the stage and didn't move the whole night, I kind of feel like, I don't expect Dillinger Escape Plan every night.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. But, and it's got something to do with the energy of it and getting into it and everything. And this rhythm, you kind of grabbed me by the face, got my attention, you know. That kind of led me down the path of, like, I remember buying one of your solo cassettes that had 2 songs on it. I don't remember what it's called. I don't remember what the songs are called. I don't have the cassette anymore because I went through that whole, like, I don't need cassettes anymore. Everything's digital. So I don't know where that went. But I bought the Technician 7-inch. It came with that lead plate.
Yeah, that's pretty rare, that one.
Yeah, I have one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's rare. We didn't make many of those. I think, I don't know how many exactly. I mean, we pressed 300 vinyls, I think, or something, but a bunch of those vinyls are just rotting away in a, I don't know where. So only, I think, like 30 or 40 maybe were made with the actual covers that we actually assembled and sold. So really, it's only like a pressing of like 40 or something of those, you know, because we really...
Really?
Yeah, you know, we pressed all these vinyls, but we didn't really get around to making that many of those lead covers, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a rare item.
I got it out to the car, and I opened it up, and there were white rubber gloves. There were white, like, nitrile gloves in it. And,
yeah. Did yours have firecrackers? Some of them had firecrackers in them, too. I don't know if yours did, but...
I don't remember. I could look, but I don't remember firecrackers.
Yeah.
But I remember, I was like, dude, I turned to my friend. I was like, these guys are insane. They have rubber gloves on their 7-inch. And he said, that's a lead plate. That's dangerous. Like, they put that in there. He's like, don't touch that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. Cool. Oh, wow. I didn't know there was only 40 of them. I have one.
Something like that. Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I don't know if anybody knows what the exact number is. We just kind of, like, us and the other band Technician, you know. I remember, like, on tour, actually, like, assembling a bunch of those. We did a tour together, you know, and we were selling them on that tour. And yeah, I don't know. We just, you know, we made some, and then, I don't know. And then that was kind of around shortly after, you know, I don't know, Clayton left the band and Technician kind of stopped playing and didn't really keep in touch. And I don't know what happened to, like,
the rest of those records. What caused Clayton to part ways?
He just wasn't interested in music anymore, actually, which was a crazy, crazy thing to me. But, decided he was going to drastically change his life path and quit music. And he got really into Buddhism, actually, and went to Tibet and decided he wanted to pursue that path. I don't know. I haven't seen or talked to him since 2004. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't really know what he's doing anymore. This life,
but wasn't bad terms or anything. He just time to leave.
It was a bad vibe at the end, definitely. Whole last year or two on tour, it was just kind of a lot of ups and downs with him. Because he was kind of slowly becoming more and more detached, not just from us, but just basically his, I don't know, just everything that was his life. Then, you know, he was kind of trying to separate from, and the last time we kind of spoke, it wasn't like a dramatic, like, get lost, I hate you sort of thing, you know. It's just kind of like, all right. You know, actually, we had a very civilized, well, it was more of an email conversation, but it was very mature and civilized about just kind of the future of the band when, you know, he kind of wrote to me, I guess, well, no, I think I wrote to him first kind of saying that, you know, obviously things aren't going well, and I was considering, you know, continuing with the band with Colin, you know, as the bassist. So I wrote him an email kind of saying that this is something I'm thinking about doing, you know, and it's obviously things aren't going well. And yeah, and he wrote back pretty much like, yeah, I don't want to do it anymore anyway, you know. So it was very mutual, and you know, Colin had already kind of been a close friend of ours already, so he was like, that's fine, and you guys can do whatever you want with the band. And yeah, he was very like hands off, like,
gotcha, okay.
Yeah, so in that respect it was sort of it was kind of a smooth transition, you know. If Colin couldn't do it, we were pretty much just ready to just end the band, me and Jeff, you know. We were just like, eh, all right, that was, we did that, let's move on. But thankfully, you know, brought Colin in, and just like creatively we're just like on fire immediately with him, you know. I think it's,
yeah, you haven't put that guy down,
yeah,
since.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, those guys, I love playing with them, you know.
Yeah, how did you meet Jeff? He's not even from around here, is he?
No, but he went to UArts too, but he's a few years younger than me. So we actually didn't meet while I was still in school. It was actually right when I graduated, and he was still had like 2 years left to finish or something there.
Okay.
The way I met Jeff is kind of a funny story. I was working in this Mexican restaurant at the time, and this guy came in. I went to school with, he was, you know, my age, and we were in classes together, and just kind of asked me what I was up to, and I was telling him about how I was trying to find a drummer for this band I want to form. We already have all this material. We were auditioning before we found Jeff. We, for like 6 months, we were putting out flyers around Philly and actually auditioning a bunch of drummers. Clayton and I would get together with these different drummers and,
okay,
and show them our, you know, what ended up being some of the earliest Dysrhythmia stuff, you know. And everyone we played with, some of them were good, but no one we played with seemed that into it. You know, it just wasn't working out with anybody. The only person that seemed really excited about the music we were showing them was this kid who, you know, he had the excitement and the drive, but just didn't, unfortunately, have the ability yet at that time, and it kind of just, okay, seemed like that would hold us back. So I was kind of losing hope. And then anyway, this guy came in to where I was working, and tell him about trying to find a drummer, and he was like, oh man, you gotta call my friend Jeff, he's amazing, you know, and I'm sure he'll be happy to like at least hear your stuff and jam a bit. And I was like, all right. So he gave me his phone number, Jeff's phone number, and I went home that night and I just kind of tossed it on my table, my kitchen table, and didn't call him for days, but luckily didn't throw the number out. And then about a week later, I had a dream one night about talking to my same friend in the same restaurant I was working in. And in the dream, he asked me if I had called Jeff yet. And I said, no. And then he said, why not? He's waiting. I swear to God, that's the dream. So I woke up from that dream thinking like, yeah, I didn't call that guy. I should just call him. Yeah, why not? So I did the next day. And then, yeah. And then, right, you know, it was, I was like, yeah, do you want to meet up? He's like, yeah. Jeff's like the most laid-back guy in the world. He kind of hasn't changed ever since I've met him. He's been the same, exactly the same. You know, it's funny. And so, yeah, it was great. Like, I remember the very first – I remember vividly the first time we played with Jeff. Like, he just jumped in. We were, like, started showing him some riffs, and he's like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, yeah. Just jumped right in. I was like, oh, wow. And he seemed actually, like, excited by the music. And so right away we knew, like, all right, well, this guy is good, so –
Yeah, okay. And for anyone who's never heard this rhythm before, this isn't these aren't butt rock riffs where a drummer can jump in and go, yeah, okay, I got this. Like, this shit's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, the early stuff was not that crazy, but yeah, still, okay. You know. Yeah, I mean, he's just I've never seen any drummer pick up things as fast as he can rhythmically, you know. So that's how we found Jeff.
And, so you want to take a turn for the existential here? Do you think sure. You think that dream was you want to go bigger than that spiritual realm or anything?
I mean, it is
power or anything, or
I don't know about getting that dramatic, but I mean okay. No, it definitely it's super, like, I can't deny it had an influence on my it definitely had an influence. I do listen to dreams, I guess. I dream a lot, actually, and I do pay attention to the messages. I'm always a lot of times I can interpret them, you know. They always do kind of most of the time mean something to me. So,
okay,
yeah, I knew from waking from that dream. I was like, yeah, there's probably a reason I just had that dream, you know.
Sure.
Didn't think it would turn into, like, you know, having a band this long and doing this much with it. So
yeah, for crying out loud, you guys just put an album out. Shame on me. I let that slide. I thought you guys were done.
We were kind of quiet for the past couple of years, but yeah. No, we've been working on material steadily since, you know, the last record that came out 4 years ago. But yeah, we haven't done much touring, you know, or anything. Right. So I can see why people kind of thought we were done or something. But
you're always around Colin because of Gorguts and all the other experimenting and everything. Where's Jeff?
You know, Jeff's got another. He's just got one other band. It's called Xevious. It's great if you've never checked it out. That's really awesome. But other than that, Jeff's kind of likes to, you know, he's got his job, and he got married, you know, and they just got a place in the city, and yeah, he's kind of, you know, in some ways he's settled down a bit more than Colin and I are. He still likes to tour and stuff, but you know, I've always been amazed that he isn't in more bands. I'm kind of glad he's not, for selfish reasons, because then he's always available for us, you know, when we want to work on things. But I'm surprised sometimes that
he's content to move at the pace that this rhythm is moving, which is kind of fortunate for you and Colin.
Yeah.
You guys are definitely a woodshed, get in there and figure it out together kind of band, and I think that you can kind of taste that in the grapes. I think, you know what I mean, like it's definitely not a
well
I think I could tell you guys are really like in each other's heads as you
Yeah, play. We couldn't do that though without, you know, that's why we kind of take a long time between records. So, I mean, the way we kind of usually operate is even after a song's done, we play it live a lot too, sometimes for years before we record it. So, you know, it's not like we're just able to just write this stuff and then go in and do it live in the studio like that. You know, I mean, a lot of times, yeah, we have these songs for years and you know, we're the kind of band that we're pretty selfish and that, you know, when we play shows, we really don't think about what people want to hear, you know, as far as like, oh, they want to hear old songs. No, we just always play what we want to play. And Lugia, that's always whatever the newest thing is that we're working on. And Lugia, we're always playing material for years before it even comes out, you know. Luckily, I feel like people like that come and see us to kind of, they don't mind that, you know. They always, I feel grateful to play in a band that doesn't have any like hits or something where I feel like we have to play this one song forever every time we play live, or else people are going to be bummed or whatever, you know. It's a nice feeling to, even when we're playing unfamiliar material to people, it's like they just seem happy to watch anyway. When we did a tour back in March this year with Gorguts in Europe, and on that tour, Disrumnia displayed our entire new album before it was even recorded, you know, as our set with no old songs. And I was kind of expecting more people to complain, especially since we've only been to Europe one other time. But nobody said anything about that. In Europe, and in Europe, it's funny, they'll tell you to your face when they're not happy about something after a show. So I took that as a good sign, you know.
It's always been I've never quite understood it, where you can go see a stand-up comedian and people start cheering for him to do the popular joke that everybody knows.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
It's super weird. Like Jim Gaffigan will never ever be able to do a show without doing the stupid Hot Pockets routine.
Right.
And I just feel like you already know what he's gonna say. What? It's not funny anymore now. And it's like, you know, do the stuff we like, Grinder Monkey, that kind of vibe to it. And I just feel like,
I know how it is though. Also being a fan of, you know, obviously of other bands and going and, you know, wanting to hear old stuff. I know. That's why I can say like, yeah, we're kind of being selfish, you know, when we just think, let's just play the stuff that interests us, you know, because I know how it is to go see a band and want to hear old stuff and then they don't play anything but new stuff. Sometimes it's a bummer, but there are bands that I, you know, that certain bands where I'm always like, well, I want to hear what they're doing now, you know.
Definitely. I mean, I know Iron Maiden has to play the Trooper, I get that, but I mean, like, don't you think this Rhythmia kind of falls into that? Aren't you guys weird enough that, like you said, you're not that, you don't have the hits. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe this Rhythmia didn't play their single. You guys don't do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's a nice feeling to not have that pressure or expectation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. Do you feel that expectations with, I mean, you're in so many other projects. Do you feel that expectation anywhere else where it's kind of like?
Sometimes with Gorguts, you know, we talk about like, you know, well, it's kind of the same with that band too. We're, you know, we all kind of are on the same page. Like, let's play the new stuff because that's what we're most excited about. Because Gorguts did the same thing. We, you know, that Disrumnia tour I just mentioned back in March, that was also with Gorguts. And during our set for Gorguts, we played the whole Pleiades Dust record from beginning to end, and that was also before it had come out. So yeah, on that tour, both bands were just doing all new material. We played some old songs after that, but still, that was kind of a lot to ask of the audience. But again, people didn't seem to complain. At least not to us directly, but yeah, sometimes, you know, with that band, I mean, I joined that band as a fan, so like, I think if I went to go see them, I would want to hear a couple old songs too, you know, so I understand that as a fan now playing in the band, and there's particular old songs that we've played, I think, every single time since I've been in the band, like the song Obscura and stuff, that I never get tired of playing, because I love playing that stuff, you know, and I love that song, so...
Yeah, you fell in with you get to play the classics of something that you were a fan of. That's like fun for you now. You know?
Yeah, I'm glad at least with that band that it's not like it's not making me dislike any old songs because I'm sick of them or something. You know,
right? I could see that.
Yeah.
So tell me how. I mean, we're probably skipping a lot, but I mean, like I said, your discography is bonkers. So we'll hit some of the big stuff. Tell me how that happened.
Joining Gorguts.
Yeah, like the story behind the call for Gorguts.
Okay. So basically, in a nutshell, Luke was in that band Negativa with Steve Hurdle, who was played a guitar on the Obscura record. And I guess one night, this is just from what Luke tells me, after practice, you know, Steve was like, oh, Gorguts is coming up on its 20th anniversary. You should do a new record, you know. And Luke was like, oh. You know, he had kind of, that band was out of his mind for years, you know, and but kind of thought that might have been a good idea. And so Steve was actually the one who showed Luke Dysrhythmia through YouTube. He showed him some live videos of us, and that's how Luke kind of became aware of me. He was actually already aware of Colin. I think he already was aware of Behold Octopus, but not Dysrhythmia. So, yeah, so anyway, Steve showed him some, yeah, so it's kind of thanks to Steve Hurdle and YouTube. Luke found out about me, and then I think he just found my MySpace page or something, because this is back in 2008 or something, you know. So yeah, he just sent me a message from his personal page or something, and I thought it was a joke, you know, honestly at first. And but of course I responded and said, tell me more, you know. And he did, and I was like, no, this is real, okay. And yeah, so right away Colin and I were like, of course we'll write music with you. You know,
did he ask for, yeah, you and Colin together
at the same time? Yeah, because
okay.
I think it was funny because I think he was already aware of Colin, and then I think he was especially psyched when he saw that we were actually like a pair already in another band. And he's like, oh great, I'll just like take them both. So yeah, that's how it happened. That's how it got started.
And he was kind of floating around, not even really thinking about Gorguts, but somebody else kind of planted a seed in his head, and then he was like, oh, I guess I kind of have to reassemble the band now, and he landed on a Dysrhythmia YouTube video.
Yeah.
No shit. Wow. I mean,
of course, like Steve showed it to him, you know, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, this guy might work, you know, and
yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it happened.
A lot of correspondence, or you go to Canada now, or how does that work?
It works great, actually. We you know, in general, Luke writes the material. I mean, Colin and I both contributed a song each to Colored Sands, but, you know, for the most part, Luke's writing the songs on guitar first, and usually pretty much every time from beginning to end. So when we get a new idea from Luke, you know, it's like a finished song, you know. It's great because it's not just like, here's some riffs I have, can you help me, you know? It's just like, here's a song, you know, and yeah, it's great. And then he gives us like total creative freedom to do whatever over that song. Cause with this band, you know, it's kind of all about, individual parts kind of creating a whole. So usually like Colin and I are kind of never playing what Luke's playing. You know, everyone's kind of doing a different thing that of course interacts with the other person's part, but it's still like very independent. And that's really fun. It's such a fun way to write when someone already gives you like a really strong idea. And then you get to have fun kind of adding your own little voice to it. You know, like the structure's already there. It's that's what's fun. It's like most of the work is kind of done, you know. Then for me, it's like the fun part. Like, how can I color this up with my own stuff, you know? And
okay.
Yeah. And then for the song that I wrote on the last record, it was kind of just the reverse process. Before I showed Luke the song, I wanted to have like the same way he presents material to me. I want to have like a complete vision to send him. You know, a complete idea. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah. So for that song, I demoed it and then I sent him the song and then he wrote his parts over that. You know, so just reverse the roles. Yeah, so we spend a lot of time kind of, writing and practicing individually at home, and then usually either we'll go up there. It's pretty much 50-50, about half the time they come down to New York, and the other half the time we go up actually to Trois Rivières, which is where Patrice, our drummer, lives, and he's got a house and rehearsal space there.
Okay.
So after months of kind of writing and practicing on our own individually, then we all meet and then actually play it all together as a band. And it's pretty cool, how quick it can come together, considering we hardly ever practice, because everyone just kind of does their homework, So if everyone has it together on their own, all you have to do is just kind of count it off, and then everyone jumps in and plays, and it's pretty tight because everyone's been practicing at home, So
sure,
yeah,
you're gonna have to in a band like that. Gorgut stuff isn't exactly I'll go ahead, start playing, I'll jump in. Like, it's stuff.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary live. I mean, when we played, back again on that March tour, our first show was kind of a larger festival called Inferno in Norway, and that was the first time we were going to be playing the whole Playdiesest record before anyone's heard. Hadn't been released yet. But anyway, I remember at that show in particular being pretty nervous because we didn't really have that many practices playing that, in practice, that whole record. So I remember at that first show, oh God, here we go, And it went all right, and then of course it got better and better as we played it every night. But it's good to be put on the spot like that. You gotta be challenged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, keeps you on your toes. You get too stagnant in one particular perfect sterile situation, and then you get thrown up in a festival and something's wrong with the sound. You better know where you are.
Oh, festivals especially. Festivals still scare me, because the sound is more unpredictable. I'm definitely way more comfortable with club shows, but there's good things about the festivals too. They're fun.
Tell me about Sabbath Assembly. What an interesting, crazy band.
Well, that's another band that already existed and I joined later. The way that kind of came about was when Disturbia was recording the Test of Submission record, while we were mixing, Colin got a phone call, and it was somebody on the phone asking him if he could play guitar just on one track. And Colin didn't have the time, so I overheard him say, oh, my friend Kevin's here, he plays guitar. So anyway, he was like, oh, my friend Dave's got this band Sabbath Assembly. They need some guitar just on one song. It'll be like a session deal, they'll pay you to do it. And I was like, all right, So that's kind of how I ended up joining Sabbath Assembly. At first, it was just kind of like a session thing, just to play on. I played on one song on their second record called Year of Gods. And then kind of thought that would be it, I had fun doing it. I liked the song, but didn't think anything else would come of it. And then I think a few months later, they had a tour coming up of Europe, and it was going to be a week in, and also parts of Scandinavia and a week in Finland and everything. And they needed a second guitar player for that tour. And I had the time, and I was like, man, that sounds fun. And I've never been to Finland, so I'll do it, So I did that tour, and then after that tour, I thought that'd be it. And then they started writing for the third record, Quaternity. And then by that point, I was like, I was almost having too much fun. And also, they're really, the people in that band are super, they're just great, to hang out with too. So So yeah, then I ended up doing the whole, you know, we ended up for Quaternity, I ended up contributing a lot more to the writing, and instead of just interpreting things I was given, I was kind of bringing in more of my own ideas. And then there's the self-titled record that came out last year, and that one is just like full on like a real band now, not so much a, you know, collective of a changing roster of people. Now it's like a real band. And we just finished our new record. Actually, I just got the master of it yesterday. And
cool.
Yeah, and it's exciting. It's kind of continues in the vein of the last record. Like it's more, you know, the band kind of keeps going in this more heavier metallic direction. And but this one we kind of brought in some more new people this time. We have Ron Road from KO.DOT on second guitar, and my friend Johnny, who played bass on the last record, also plays in Xevious with Jeff and a bunch of other projects. He had much more of a creative input in this new stuff, and he's got all sorts of really interesting ideas. So this new record is very it's really progressive, actually, without going too over the top, but still like songs. But
okay,
a lot more like kind of interesting ideas going on, I think, musically, and pretty heavy emotionally too, actually.
The band's definitely like it's a deep band with a lot of vision. I'll give them that, because they have like a, I'm struggling to find it right now. I'm trying to look it up too. But they had like a mission statement on the website.
Well, the band has kind of changed gears as far as the lyrical content too. Even like on the band, you know, before I joined, like lyrically and musically, it was based on this. This cult, the Process Church of the Final Judgment, who were this cult in the 70s that worshipped God and Satan, both. And they had like their own hymnal, and they had their own songs that they wrote and sang in their gatherings. But none, as far as I know, none of these hymns have ever been recorded or released or anything by anybody. So that was kind of Dave Nuss is the drummer. Kind of, he's the guy who started the band. That was his original vision. And then with the Quaternity record, which is the third one, it was kind of half Process Church stuff and then half original stuff. And now it's just, now we've gone beyond the Process Church stuff, and it's all original material and original lyrics and everything. And I kind of got away from the whole cult thing. It's kind of
how do I word that now? Originally, the vision was just to kind of bring attention to the hymnals of this church, or are these practicing members, or is this like a
nobody was a member of this cult or anything. It's just more bringing to life these songs. You know, it was all kind of Dave Nuss's vision, and actually Jamie too, our singer, she was brought in on, there was a different vocalist on the first record, and she was brought in on the second record, and that was the one where I just played on one song. When she was brought in for that record, it was like really new. She had to learn all this material, all the stuff on that record, she had to learn really fast and then sing it immediately on the spot in the studio, apparently. So I think it wasn't until Quaternity where we started to, like, me, her, and Dave as a trio kind of really started to find, discover each other as people, and also as like musicians and what we want to do musically. And it's almost like that was kind of like the first two records are so different from everything else that's come after. It's a weird band. I don't know where it's going, but we have a lot of fun with it. Yeah, and so it's, I feel fortunate to have all these different people to play music with, you know, and keeps everything feeling fresh, you know. I don't get burnt out on any particular project or anything.
You live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of that band is in Texas.
Right now, so there's five of us in the band, three of us are in New York, and then two of them are in Texas, our singer Jamie and our drummer Dave. Yeah.
Okay. And then obviously half of Gorguts is in Canada.
Yep.
And is Colin in New York?
Colin and Jeff and I are all here. I don't think it's interesting with Sabbath Assembly Gorgas. Those bands work really well somehow as long distance bands. I don't think Dysrhythmia would. I'm glad we're still all in the same city because I don't think that band could really be very productive if we live too far away from each other. We're kind of band that really needs to kind of be in the same room when we're working things out together musically, working out our material.
Anything about Byla at all? I'm learning about it now. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a project. It's just Colin and I actually only really ever put out two recordings. The first one we started working on before Colin even joined Dysrhythmia. Actually, shortly before we had lost Clayton, I was already kind of working on music with Colin, which became the first Byla recording, and. That record is just all, it's just me and him, and it's pretty much all entirely guitar, acoustic and electric, kind of blended together. And I guess kind of one of Colin's first recordings, one of his earliest ones, I guess. We Colin recorded it. It was really fun to do. You know, at the time he was living in some small apartment in New York City because he was still at NYU when we actually made that record. And I would just come up, on certain weekends on the bus from Philly. And, we just kind of wanted to make like a cool ambient guitar record, really. And so that's what the first one is. And then what actually ended up happening was, that magazine Decibel did some sort of like call and response thing where they play people songs and they talk about what they think of them or whatever. And, strangely enough, they picked a Byla song, when Jarbo was, their person they chose to, reactions from or whatever. And she ended up really liking our track, which I was really psyched about because I'm a huge fan of Swans and her too, her own solo stuff. So kind of right around when that happened, she happened to be also playing a show in Philly. So I went to see her live and introduced myself and said, hey, I play in that Project Byla that you heard, And in her response to the song, she's like, "Oh, I could hear vocals over this or something." And so when I met her, I was like, "Well, we should do something together," you know. So then we did a collaborative record with her, and that's kind of all Bila's done. It's just those two records. And the one we did with her is like really different from the first one. It's way more abrasive, and it's still ambient, but it's like harsh. It's like brutal ambient, with some moments of relief. But
you seem completely engrossed with guitar and making music pretty much 24/7. That's obviously what you do. I'm sure you're not holding down any sort of normal job with the type of schedule you must keep with all this stuff. If you do, I'm sure it's in between and everything. Mm-hmm. But how'd that conversation go with the parents after the did you finish your degree?
Oh yeah, I graduated. Yeah, I mean,
okay. And they knew what you were heading into.
They've always been supportive. Super supportive. My mom played guitar growing up, and just like folk songs and stuff. But she always had an acoustic guitar around the house. And
okay.
So you know, I first took interest. It's kind of, I mean, it's really through my mom that I developed an interest in music, because not only did she have the guitar lying around the house, but also one of my earliest memories of hearing music and really loving the sound of it is Beat It by Michael Jackson, actually. I remember when she bought Thriller and was listening to it all the time on the record player. In particular, the guitar solo in Beat It really grabbed my ears. You know, my ears really perked up when I heard that.
It's Eddie, right?
Was that?
Isn't that Eddie?
Yeah. So I heard that before I ever heard Van Halen, you know. I was still really young then, you know, so I didn't really know much about anything really at that point. You know, it was just to kind of grab my ears. So it wasn't until like a few years later, you know, I guess from around the time of like 9 or 10 or something, I was, you know, watching a lot of MTV, and I started seeing, you know, a lot of videos on MTV, and guitar players just looked really cool on MTV, you know, and loved the sound of it. And so, yeah, I just asked for my own guitar for Christmas, and then they got me one, and my mom kind of immediately signed me up for lessons, and I was just obsessed, you know, right from the second I got a guitar. I just didn't leave my room, you know, and it's just never, all throughout high school was kind of the same way. I was a real shut-in, you know.
Right.
Even in high school, I didn't care about parties or any socializing besides going to shows occasionally, you know.
Right.
I was just obsessed with the instrument and getting better and, you know, and yeah, all that stuff. And so I think they were just happy I found something I was passionate about, you know. They worry sometimes, I'm sure, about the unpredictability of, you know, especially financial stability and things like that. You know,
sure.
Especially as I get older, but I don't know. I worry about that too, but I can't. You know, I'm very much a live in the moment type of person. So I just try not to worry too much about the future ever, and just really focus on the now. You know, and making the now a productive thing. You know. I notice even, you know, Bandcamp has kind of been a really great thing, I think, for independent artists. That's where I have all my solo stuff. I like to self-release most of my own solo stuff and just have control over it. Or, you know, work with small. I also work with some small kind of cassette-oriented labels lately that will press cassettes, you know, but I still have, like, I can still sell it myself on Bandcamp and things like that. And that's really great, but kind of as an experiment, last year I signed up with a digital distributor too to have all my solo stuff put on Spotify and all YouTube and all that stuff. And I definitely saw a drop in my Bandcamp sales after everything went on Spotify and all that. So, you know, it's about, you know, and then you get royalties from all the streams, but it's like fractions of a penny. I mean, it's pretty sad. So, you know, it's a trade-off. It's like, do you care about making money, or do you care about just having people hear your music easily?
We'll be right back.
I think in the end it's more about exposure. Yeah, I don't know. It's like if I kind of, yeah, I'm interested in the world of film and like doing soundtrack stuff and things like that. And sometimes I just think about things like if through some like word of mouth thing, someone heard my name and was like, "That sounds interesting. I want to check that out now." I do want it to be like easily accessible immediately, you know, like through Spotify or something. So in general, I'm fine with having my stuff on there, you know. And I still think Bandcamp's great. There's still people that are very loyal, you know, that they want, you know, if they can't even if they can't get the physical copy, because some of my stuff is just totally just a digital, just digital releases. You know, there is no physical item, you know, they can buy. Still people that were like loyal to buying it from me on Bandcamp, which I really appreciate it, you know.
I like those types of conversations because I worry, you know, really not specifically about you because I don't know you, but I mean like I worry about seeing like some of these guys that are doing this for a living, and I feel like, you know, just like those of us that get up and go to work every day, and as you get older your body's starting to break down and knees are starting to squeak and make crackly noises, and you start wondering like, is this sustainable? Can I do this till, you know, to everybody? Everybody magically thinks once we hit 65, someone's going to go, "Okay, you're done now. Here's a check and a watch, and you can go relax a little bit." And that ain't the deal anymore for those of us that have working stiff jobs. I guess it's even scarier for musicians.
It is, yeah. And I think about all the kind of people I've met over the years. That's one of the great things about touring that I still enjoy is just kind of the friendships I've made and things throughout my years touring, that also can lead to other, you know, I don't know. I think about this recently too, like, besides just playing music, there's lots of other things that involve music that I enjoy doing too, outside of just playing. I mean, of course, playing is my favorite part, but yeah, sometimes I think about other kind of jobs I can do as well that involve touring, even like, yeah, working for. It's usually like the people that work for bands that make, they usually make more than the bands make. You know? I started thinking about that recently. I was like, oh, for like in between tour type of work, you know, I could totally go on the road and be a merch guy, you know, or something like that, you know, do something that involves not playing, but still touring and stuff. And so, yeah, I think there's, you know, you just have to, yeah, you just kind of have to be creative about it. You know, you can't, yeah, you can't. I don't think I ever grew up in it. I think I'm still too young to have ever grown up in a time where, like, you got huge advances from labels and lots of royalties coming in from record sales. Even when I started kind of putting out albums, that was already, like, pretty dead. You know? So I don't know what it was like back in those glory days. You know, I can only imagine. So I guess I'm kind of used to it being the way it's been, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and teaching is kind of, that's the way I pretty much sustain myself in between tours is teaching online and in person and stuff. And
okay.
Yeah, and through touring and stuff, you know, I'm putting out records that, you know, that people become aware of me as a player, and then they hear that I teach too. And then, so, yeah, that's another thing. I'll pick up any sort of odd job though that comes my way if I need to. You know, I've done lots of hilariously weird temp work and stuff since living here in New York, you know.
Go ahead, give us a couple.
Oh man, there was one where it was like a Seinfeld or like Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of like a episode or something. Yeah, I got called in to dressed in like a penguin outfit for
shut up, dude.
For like some conference that was going on, and it involved some health insurance company whose mascot was a penguin. And yeah, they were like, do you have a problem wearing an animal outfit? You know, you'll get paid a lot and you only have to work for a few hours, but you'll get paid for a whole day, you know, and no one will see what you look like anyway. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. Yeah. You know? So I did it, but it was just a disaster the whole day. I showed up and, you know, felt really ridiculous, and they wanted me to like move around and be animated, and I just felt, even though no one could see me, I felt just ridiculous and embarrassed, and I just wasn't moving. And like the guy who, you know, the boss of this company or whatever came up and like whispered angrily in my ear, like, aren't you an actor? You know? And I was like, no, you know? And he's like, start acting. They told me you were an actor. And I'm like, I'm not an actor.
From inside the penguin suit?
Yeah, yeah. And I also couldn't see, you know, where the eyes were like over my head, you know, so I had to kind of look out the bill, you know, of the costume. And oh God, yeah. And then eventually I had to like, you know, use the restroom, and I was like debating whether I should, do I have to take this whole outfit off, or can I find a way to kind of like not have to do that and still go to the bathroom. So I'm like, I'm doing this in the restroom, and this was taking place in like this fancy hotel, this conference that I had to do the job at. I went into the bathroom, and it was like totally empty bathroom. I'm just kind of standing there at the urinal with my penguin outfit on, just wondering, what should I do? And these two college bros like come in together at the same time while I'm standing there just in front of a urinal in a penguin outfit. And they don't say anything, but I could tell they just wanted to bust out laughing, you know, or say something to me, but they just like kept quiet. And then it was just so awkward that I just said like, yeah, there's a penguin in the bathroom. And then they just start cracking up.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then right after that happened, I leave the restroom, and then I think it was probably their girlfriend or something. And like these two girls were standing there, and they're like, oh my God, I want a picture. And then like people want pictures with me. And then I sit down on the couch, and then this old man, this like random old man, just comes up to me, and he's just like, did you hear that joke about the penguin? You know? And I was like, ugh, no. And he's like, it was a real icebreaker, you know? And then he just walks away. It's like, this felt so ridiculous that day. And then to top it all off, it's like the end of the, oh, and I should also mention that former governor Mario Cuomo was like the main speaker at this event. And
oh my God, okay,
so,
all right.
Yeah, so at the end of the event, they tell me to go back in and wave goodbye to people or something as they're leaving. And so I do that, and then I remember seeing Mario Cuomo. I could see him, like, kind of out of the corner of my little stupid costume, you know, through some opening, just looking over at me, just like, what the hell? Like, what is this? You know, why? What is this doing here? You know, and I was bumping, you know, I was constantly like bumping into to the people cleaning up plates, and it just, it felt so surreal and ridiculous. So that was one of the jobs.
All right.
You know, that's what happens when you work in New York. It's kind of, I know.
I guess,
you know,
okay.
You encounter those kind of things, you know, and it's just, it's fun, you know, life is ridiculous, so. Might as well laugh at it.
That's awesome that you told that story. That I didn't see.
I haven't really. I've never told that story in an interview before or anything. It's too embarrassing. But now it's too late, I guess.
Yeah. It's out there now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have a hard time listening to Gorguts now. Picture you.
I always think I think about that.
You know why I'm laughing is because when you get on stage, you unleash that hair of yours, and it just turns into like this, right? But when you're very like you're very kind of subdued when you're not on stage.
Well, that's because I get to go on stage. That's a topic that's kind of, or that's a thing that's come up recently that I feel like a lot of people for whatever reason recently have been kind of saying to me about the whole. You're very relaxed, and then you go on stage, and then you're something else. And I think I'm only relaxed because I get to do that. I really don't think I would be as relaxed of a person if I didn't get to get that out, you know, on stage.
Good point. But where I was going with this was you're probably gonna hang up on me. Where I was going with this is when you're in your subdued, not on stage. Not on stage mode. You have your hoodie. You have your hoodie on. Black hood pulled up. If I had to go with an animal, like you just, it kind of reminds me of a penguin. Now I don't think I would have put the two together until I had that story, and now I'm just gonna giggle all the time.
Oh man,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, now you think about that anytime. Wearing black hoodies is like that's like a popular thing bands do to look scary now, right? So now everyone's going to wear a penguin now.
Now you've ruined that for me too.
Yeah.
I go out of my way to not do the black hoodie, black jeans, chain wallet. I just feel like everybody, it's how everybody dresses. I don't do that. But that's hilarious. You lost me with the penguin thing. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see anything that silly coming. That's great.
Oh, yeah. It happened.
Yeah, my mom worries about me sometime, but I pick up a penguin gig now and again, and everything will be all right.
Yeah. Then what's funny is actually after that, I ended up working at Penguin Publishing. His mascot is also a penguin, so
that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Is that how you got the job? Because you were like, I got a lot of experience. I dressed up as a penguin for Mario Cuomo.
No, you know, I've never actually told them about that. When I work there, I don't know why. I think I really tried to block that out of my memory.
So what's next? What you got cooking now? Like tour's over and
We got a bunch more stuff coming up next year. I don't know how much I can say yet. I mean, two things I guess I can talk about are we're going back to Australia and New Zealand again in March. For I think only two shows have been announced so far, but there's gonna be more than that. And then, and then Gorguts and Dysrhythmia are gonna do some like a week of Canadian dates mid-April together up in Canada. Oh, yeah, Canadian. that's redundant. And then, yeah, we'll probably do another sort of U.S. tour of some kind for the end of summer. Yeah, some more touring. Sabbath Assembly will have a new record out in April. Actually, I'm going to put out another solo thing probably in January. I have it done already. I'm going to get it mastered next month.
Wow.
It'll be like another EP, just five songs, but stuff I've been working on all year since January. I just finished up. And I guess something interesting I'm doing, I'm going to guest on a song with one of the guys from Enslaved is doing he has like a solo electronic project, and he's doing a show in December here in New York at Scandinavia House. And
okay.
I got invited to participate in that. We've never met, and apparently we're not going to have any time to probably even sound check. I think it's going to be one of those things where we're just going to get up there and just do it. So that should be interesting. That's next month. So I guess that's what's coming up in the immediate future.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Thanks. Thanks so much for taking all the time to talk about all this stuff and everything. This has been great.
Cool.
And I'm gonna put your many bands links in the notes for the show, and I'll make sure that I get your the Kevin Hufnagel band camp page up there.
Cool. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.